Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Robert Yeager and the Tau Foundation.
This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Coming up, we'll learn more about a new early childhood initiative in the city of New Haven. It's called NH Child. We'll sit down with the program's interim director. First, we take you inside Expressiones Cultural Center. Expressiones is a nonprofit organization that offers bilingual art programs in the community and works directly with New London public school students to highlight Latin American culture. We'll hear more about its mission coming up when I sit down with Executive Director Jose Garaycochea. Expressiones has a gallery on 84 Bank Street, where it features the work of artists in residence who work with schoolchildren. Recently, we drove down to New London to see the gallery for ourselves and meet Expressiones artists in residence.
I'm Ramon Ostolaza. I'm from Lima, Peru. I'm an engineer. I'm an artist, but I'm also an educator. I love to teach, to share what I learn.
Ramon grew up in Lima, where his family's influence drew out his artistic side.
My father studied art, and he liked painting, and he actually worked on a bank. But I had this chance to go on weekends with his friends and go to openings and go to their ateliers and see them working. And sometimes, a two-year-old kid will mess something that might be really important. Yes, but so art has been part of my life all the time.
So when you were going out with your father and his friends, you had a sketchbook, or you were drawing what you saw around you?
Yeah, well, we'd be drawing what I saw around. I will learn about techniques of sketching or mixing colors or perspective or how to get, when you're looking something and an animal, a horse, and it suddenly moves, yes, and you need to just really capture what you saw quickly. So this sort of techniques, I learned it from them and keep practicing.
So how did that experience lead you to becoming a forestry engineer? Tell us what that is exactly.
Well, forestry engineer is a very mixed career. We said we're a jack of all trades and master of none. We know about, ecology. We know about animals, animal behavior, so some biology. We learn a lot of engineering on designing and calculations for wood resistance and chemistry for wood transformation, and also all the management of a forest, because forests are really complex environments. Or I see them know this, it's like a living thing. When you go to the Amazon, and the Amazon is a huge beast. It's a monster. And yeah. So this career is really interesting, but it opened me the opportunity to go places. Because, there are no forests in the city of Lima. Lima is a big city. We have 10 million going to 12 million people living there. It's concrete everywhere. There are not many forests. Forests are far away. So I need to go to the highlands. I need to go to the jungle. I need to work in the desert. I've worked in different environments and had a chance to meet people from there. How many people can say, okay, I woke up in the morning in a tent in the middle of the Amazon jungle. Yes, I go jump into a helicopter, fly for 30 minutes, then drop out of from the helicopter in a rope, 75 meters, that's 210 feet to the ground, and be left there with a team of seven people, and we need to go to some place and find some group of people and start talking with them and getting into an agreement to see, okay, can we actually go and explore this place? And there are people that live there. And then going back and finding a canoe and then going down a river and get paid for that. Yes, there's a lot of people that actually pay a lot of money for doing one of those things. I was getting paid for doing that thing.
And so you did that for nearly 30 years.
Yeah.
So how did you then, did you, all this time, were you still creating art? Or is this something that you kind of transitioned to?
No, I've been sketching, doodling, doing my pieces all the time. Maybe not with the intention of doing a show or making a collection of art, but just doing what I was feeling. Sometimes in the forest, I just was able to doodle or something like that. I'll show you my sketchbooks, and then when I came back into my home, I will have more time and maybe start doing some sculpting. I love working with materials, you know, not only paper, I will work wood, metal, whatever comes into my hands. And that's it.
Expressiones Gallery sits inside a brick building in front of the Thames River. The afternoon sun lights up the table in front of us, where Ramon has placed his leather-bound sketchbook. This is where his ideas begin.
This show begins a long time ago, really long time ago. The rebel, the purple one, is a hippo head with wings of colorful wings. And this was a design I made like 8 years ago. It was basically designed, I was going to do something on the deck of my skateboard. So I wanted something that was like kind of expressing a part of me, and that's the rebel. That's why a flying hippo. It's purple, it has, you know, wings of every color you can imagine.
Why a hippo? Because my understanding is they can
not?
Be pretty ferocious.
Yes, they can be. Actually, that's one of the points. You will see them and say, oh yeah, that's big, that's cute. Yeah, you can it even gives you know to hug him and cuddle him. But it's a fierce animal. If you don't get it, it will destroy everything in its path. A hippo can be dangerous, but you need just to understand him and respect him. Yes, and a flying hippo is something that can be, you know, something to be taken in consideration. Yes, the other elements, for example, the elephant. The elephant is a derivation from a character from a cartoon. There's a cartoon called Adventure Time, and then here appears this two-headed elephant in one chapter. It was a loose character that appeared, and it captured my attention, and then I did a couple of drawings of him. I designed a sticker. I don't know if I have it. And I'm also a big fan of sci-fi and literature, so I read a lot. I did a design of this elephant. Is flying with the background of the city from Blade Runner. And then did a stamp that was saying, this is the test to find if you were a replicant or not. So this is that test, and the flying hippo, as you're sitting in your balcony, just relaxing, the ancient mystical elephant appears in front of you, and you're not doing nothing. Why you're not doing nothing? And so I made a postcard and sent it to my friends. And very few of them got a question and answered me. But most of them were, what? What have you done? What's this? But that was interesting. It's an experiment. So I keep experimenting with people all the time. And so the masks appeared as a two-headed polyhedron mask. But then it was kind of heavy and unbalanced. So it turned into this new version, and it has a third eye. Yes.
And, on its forehead.
Yes, on its forehead. And so it's also a reference to Ganesh, but it's also a reference to Faun Ganley. There is a character from Lovecraft and the Cthulhu myths, ancient gods. So then, well, as you can see, it was over there for another show.
So there are 7 masks displayed here in Expressiones.
There are a couple more, at least one more that is going, and there's a ninth one that is in process.
So Ramon, why did you choose these particular masks?
Those are part of myself. The show is called Split, and it's an introspection into my personality and the different aspects of my personality. Yes, so you have the first one that is just in blank right now. It's a dragon, yes, it's Tiamat, it's chaos. Yes, but it's not chaos, it's not evil, it's just chaos. It just generates random stuff. But from that random stuff, it learns. It analyzes cause and effect. The next one is a warrior. It doesn't have a name. It's just the protector part. I'm a father. I'm a kind of granddad. So, you know, it has parts of maybe Corinthian and classic Etruscan helmets, but also some medieval parts of them. And some pre-Hispanic stuff mixed in it. The next one is another dragon. It's different. It's a force of nature. It's going to be covered in wood and in living things.
This is Where We Live. I'm talking with Ramon Ostolaza, an artist in residence at Expressiones, a New London art organization. His art show, Split, opens this weekend. The exhibit features deeply hued masks that Ramon created using a variety of materials. Some are shaped like the head of an elephant or a hippo, but Ramon's imagination makes them look like beasts you've never seen before, complete with rainbow feathers and bright horns. Traditional Peruvian art is often colorful. I asked Ramon, who grew up in Peru, if Andean culture is reflected in his artwork.
Yes, there are some part of you know, of the culture from not all only Lima or the highlands or the jungle. It's basically from all over the world. You will see references to, I don't know, Asian culture, to European culture, to South American culture, popular culture, to cartoons, to anime.
That mask near the end reminds me a little bit of Viking culture. Coincidence?
No.
The feathers and the way the mask almost looks like a metal.
Yeah, well, it was not going to be that. It was going to be actually different. When I start creating, it's a process, it's a complex process, you know. Sometimes I'm working on a character and then some other is just knocking on my head and saying, hey, I need to come out, you know, and then it's like that. The Moche mask was working with this from an origami piece I made one day dining in this place that is near my home in Lima. And it was initially going to be something like that, that simple. But I thought it needed something to support. And then I started working on the structure from the warrior. But then I saw the piece and said, no, this is not. It is taking its own life. And it's, it resembled some warrior mask. But for me, it was more like an Etruscan mask. That's why Etruscos. It's from before Rome, even. It's older than that. It's from the Greeks and all this stuff. So if you take a closer look, the piece will have all these spirals, Yes, and all this riveted, like in wire, that they had. The upper part, the dragon, is more like the dragon from the Dolundur helm that is mentioned in Tolkien's book and Sons of Húrin, I guess. I don't recall the exact name of the book. Tiamat comes from Babylonian culture. It's really ancient.
Ramon Ostolaza is an artist from Peru who's working with the New London nonprofit Expresiones. Its Artists in Residence program pairs Ramon with New London public school students. He's been working with fourth graders at Harbor Elementary School.
Yes, well, with the students, we are working with them on this project that is about Viking culture. The intention is not necessarily Vikings, but Vikings are captivating. The intention is to show them that not everything is as they told you. So we start with them with this question of who were the Vikings? And they say, oh no, these big guys, you know, swords and coming and pillaging and wrecking everything and stealing gold. And then I start talking with them and explaining that it was just one part of what they did. But they were artists, they were engineers, they were, you know, they had a very, very rich culture. They wrote, they make poems, there's not much painting, but they cut on stones. You will find these beautiful rune stones. They will have jewelry with very intricated patterns. And they will also trade and travel alone all over the world. They even came here, you know, before Columbus. So they were the real guys that found this part of the world, yes.
So, and when they learn these things, how do they react?
It's fun because most of them, it's like, but I thought this was like that, no? And then they start. Oh, so then this other stuff can be like that, and they start imagining and creating their own vision, and from that, it's like, okay, you go and learn, you go and find out what you're doing. So they create their own visions of that. So we've been working on, for example, their tunics. They are developing their own character. So we give them T-shirts, and they start designing their own tunics and doing them. So every class we get together and we get into character. So I dress like a Viking, they dress like with their tunics. We were learning about the runes. So they were drawing the runes, and now we're working on shields. There was a small shield with paper, but I'll show you. In a paper plate, this kid will have drawn what he imagines is a wolf head. And then he learned from the class we were working on the runes, he actually learned the alphabet, and he wrote a message. But there are other guys. This girl, she loved clowns, so she's drawing clowns as her shield. So they can express their own. Yes, it's not, you have to do a dragon or a bear or, no, it's, the idea behind a shield is to, everyone can identify you. So what is your message? How do you want to be identified?
Oh, Ramon, you told us that you're here for 2 months before you head back to Lima. So besides the art show here at Expresiones, what do you think are the goals for your work as an artist with these students?
Well, if they can not only learn to express them and learn to investigate by themselves and find out that there are many other things in the world that are not exactly as you were told, that will be great. Yes, and if from them one of them actually ends up liking some history, that will be better. And so I run a similar program in Lima, based on one of the viceroys, and one of the kids actually started asking a lot of questions about this guy. That was fun.
Ramon, it's a pleasure to meet you and to speak with you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure for me too. I really love coming here. People in Expresiones are really, really, really kind. I feel really close to them. It's like, I feel like I'm with family.
Ramon Ostolaza is the artist in residence at Expresiones in New London. His art show, Split, opens tomorrow, March 22nd. It features several masks he created that, in his words, are a mixture of characters from his imaginarium. You can see pictures from our visit to Expresiones on our website, wmpr.org/where we live, including the Where We Live team, wearing some of Ramon's one-of-a-kind masks. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up, we'll introduce you to the co-founder of Expresiones. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We met Ramon Ostolaza earlier. He's from Peru and is the artist in residence at Expresiones Cultural Center in New London. Jose Garaycochea is the executive director of the nonprofit. I sat down with him inside the art gallery to hear more about his work to highlight Latin American arts and culture.
Well, we are located at 84 Bank Street in downtown of New London. We are basically a block from the train station. As a non-profit, we are here in New London since 2009. Our first location was around the corner on State Street, 74 State Street. We were there for 3 years, and then after that, we moved to this location at 84 Bank Street. Basically, here we are 6-7 years.
Tell me a little bit about your background. Where did you come from before you moved to Connecticut?
I'm originally from Chile. My initial background is a civil engineer. I was working as an engineer for probably 13 years. I love to work as an engineer, but later in life I discovered I love education. It's not much money in education, but I have the passion. I love that. And the money, in some way, I can figure it out. Then, being in Chile, I studied art administration. And then I was working in both areas as an engineer, but also creating different cultural projects. Because of those projects, I started to participate in different art fairs. In Art Buenos Aires, Art Venezuela, in Art Miami, in Art New York. I don't know how I ended up here, but it was never was part of the plan. Never was part of the plan.
You mentioned that you were drawn to education. So part of the mission of Expresiones is to connect art with the community, especially the children. Can you walk us through the origins of that and what you're doing now?
Well, basically, everything started when I came to this country. And I realized people starting calling me that I'm Latino. I was Latino. Well, I'm Latino. And then I feel surprised because I never identified myself as a Latino. Olgi was a person. I was a human living in South America. But here, they put you a label Latino. But I realized was a misperception about what is Latino, because people in this area starting to approach me, asking me with different questions. If my place in Chile, we love to eat black beans and rice. And I say, no, but Latino love that. Say, well, some Latino, but doesn't mean all Latino love black beans and rice. Then was too many detail I realized was a misperception. Then trying to figure it out how we can improve that perception, we decide to invite people to have dinner. And we call cultural dinner. We were not non-profit at that time. My partner and I, we decide to have dinner. Then we find a topic like the onion. And we find point about the onion, music about the onion, and we design a menu about the onion to explain to the people who we are. Then we have music, food, and art. And people are starting to realize, oh, wow, this is really interesting. We didn't know that. Then, for example, one of the interesting topics was the potato. When the people say, well, Peru have over 100 different kind of potato. So it's really, yes, we have plenty, even though I'm not from Peru, I'm from Chile, but traveling, I realize of that. And when you design a menu about potato, when you design a music about potato, everything about potato, people love that. And we're starting to realize we are improving the real connection between two different cultures. Then we realized we were using our own money to do that. At the beginning was fine, but this is starting to grow. And then my partner is starting selling art. And then we are using 10% of that, 20%, 40%, 50%, say, no, we need to find a better way. And we decide to become a non-profit organization. Even though at that time we already offering activity to the local school. But also we realize the perception about the administrator, about art, is something extremely superficial. It's something that important for the education. Then when you try to explain to them how important is art in the education, how art opens the eyes of the family or the kid, it's a huge change. Well, it took us probably 6 years for the administration to understand what we are doing. At the beginning, they say, no, no, we are fine. Art is fine. Art is just something so simple. Now we are connecting art with all the skills. But took years for the people.
So when you talk about the administration, so this is the New London Public School District?
Mostly. We started in Stonington. Stonington is very nice area, but we realized we were in the wrong place because we love diversity. I love food. I love to have options. There was not much option, even though people, phenomenal people, but nice people, but not much option. We were there only for 1 year. And then we moved to New London, trying to find the right place. And we realized New London is our place, because if you see, I don't have the number in my mind, but probably students here, 43% of the students in this area coming from different countries. And then that means this community very diverse.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. I'm speaking with Jose Garay-Cochea, the executive director of Expresiones, a nonprofit located on Bank Street in New London, Connecticut. Earlier, we talked with the organization's current artist-in-residence, Ramon Ostolaza, who's been bringing his creativity into the local public schools.
We had the opportunity to speak to Ramon, who is a wonderful man. You could just tell by speaking with him, very gregarious. You could see that he knows how to connect with people. So he's one of the examples of the resident artists that Expresiones has brought to New London. Can you talk a little bit more about the program where Ramon is going into the schools and helping connect the students with his art?
Well, as I mentioned before, we started inviting to the New London Public School Administrator to really understand the role of the art in the core curriculum. At the beginning, we were only after school program because they were not really convinced about our offer. then they accept us to be part of the in class. Then we started to have a meeting between the principal, the teacher, the artist, and us. And the artist is starting to talk about his or her own skills, and we develop at that moment and a full project. That project was connecting the core curriculum. Then we are inserting the artist in the entire school system. Ramon came here probably 3 years ago. One of the things catch my attention really deeply, at that time was summertime. During the summer here is very intensive because the artist is working 5 days a week, the full day with different organization. At that time, Ramon was working with kids from a boys and girls club. The kids there were coming from different background, different family issues. But Ramon have a personality who can really engage all of them and keep them really concentrated in the project. He did a phenomenal job, phenomenal job. Then with Ramon, he proposed a project about the recreation an old village in Europe to bring to New London. I found fantastic because we are connecting history, science, sociology, how the kid can interact, how they can respect different options, different decisions. But also we are using the art as a channel to really bring and do that.
How does Expressiones get financial support, and what are your goals to expand this statewide?
Well, initially we started with the art sale. Mostly percentage of the art sale was toward to this program. But then when we were growing, we realized we need more fun. And that was the moment when we decided to become a non-profit organization. Then we are basically applying for grant different organization. We are really happy with Hartford. Hartford have different foundation, and they are extremely supportive of us. When I say extremely, because they really believe in what we are doing here, then we are really pleased with that. Our intention is to expand this program, hopefully, to all the schools in New London and out of New London. We had a meeting, I don't know, a few months ago with the former executive director of the Connecticut Office of the Art. And she was really happy with all our project, and she was inviting us to work in Hartford. I guess Hartford will be a phenomenal place, but we need to find the right moment to really expand to a city like that. But this is the intention.
You talked earlier about how you started getting roots into the community by addressing misperceptions and exposing members of the community who may not have been familiar with Latino culture. When you look at news and events that are happening today, certain rhetoric being repeated about Latinos, how does that make you feel, and does it make you more committed to the work you're doing?
Well, this is a really interesting phenomenon. I know being Latino in this moment in this country, we are the bottom part of the society. We are not the top one. We have really bad experience in the past just because we are Latino. But for me, it's the opposite effect. It's more inspiration. It's more motivation to do more and more activity. Because I really believe the people who are exposed to diversity, people like myself, my accent is really strong. I'm teaching right now. I'm teaching at Connecticut College. I'm teaching at Three River Community College. And my first speech to my students is, give me a week. After a week, you will accustom to my accent. After that, we will work together really well. Then it's exposure. Then that is exactly the situation.
That was Jose Garay-Cochea, Executive Director of Expressiones in New London, Connecticut. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up, exposing children to different types of enrichment has multiple benefits, but not all communities have nonprofits that can offer these kinds of programs. After the break, we'll hear about efforts in New Haven to connect young children to early childhood initiatives. And you can join us too. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live.
Yeah. Yo me enamoré del aire, ay, del aire me enamoré. Y como el amor es aire, ay, en el aire me quedé. Bonito es el aire, pero ¿quién podrá detener su marcha, su rumbo final? Bonito es el aire, pero ¿quién podrá detener su marcha, su rumbo final?
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. Where We Live's coming to a coffee shop near you. We've been hosting coffee breaks at local cafes around the state to hear from you. What issue or story in your community is not getting the attention it needs? You can join me and Where We Live producers Lydia Brown and Carmen Baskoff and other members of our team Tuesday, March 26th. That's next week at Purgatory Coffee Roasters in Middletown, Connecticut. You can learn more at our Facebook page. Just search for Where We Live. Now, multiple studies have shown early childhood education helps children learn. It not only makes them more likely to succeed in school, but it also has long-term positive effects in their communities. But access to quality programs is limited, and there's a new initiative in New Haven that aims to change this by reaching all children from birth to age 8. I want to welcome into our studio Alex Schiavone. She's executive director of the Friends Center for Children and interim program director of NH Child. Alex, welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you. Nice to be here.
So I mentioned this new initiative, NH Child. What does that stand for, and what are some of the goals?
Right. NH Child stands for New Haven Children's Ideal Learning District, and it is an initiative that focuses on two major goals, which is access and quality. And then under each pathway, there are three different buckets of work. So access is about creating more spots for children. It's about figuring out how to fund those spots, and that's figuring out how to get parents into the spots. And quality looks at parent engagement and empowerment work, professional learning for teachers, and degree granting for early childhood educators.
I know for several years there's been a focus on universal pre-K or preschool, and oftentimes what gets how it gets stopped up is this thinking about funding and
right.
what the state can provide. So you had mentioned improving access. So how do you do that to reach all, like we're talking about 14,000 children in
yes.
New Haven?
So in New Haven there are 14,000 children. The existing system in the 0 to 5 is pretty much not there. So we have this huge opportunity to really create a system. The first thing we need to do is actually create slots. There are about 3,000 children who would like access to early childhood education that don't have it. So we have a plan, a 10-year plan, to create 2,500 spaces with the option of adding another 500 as we go through the 10 years, depending on birth rates and how things like that. And that will be done through 20 center-based programs and 68 home daycare programs. So we're really thinking about reaching into communities and figuring out what communities need, not just assuming that a center or a home care is the right option for that community.
I was looking into your bio. You're a longtime resident of New Haven.
I am.
You have a long background in early education.
I do.
So I'm just curious, when we think about, when we mentioned ideal learning, what are we talking about?
Yeah, good question.
And, you know, what were some of these impetus of having this coalition try to work towards this goal, Alex?
Yeah. So lots there. One is I just would really like to reiterate that I am a longtime New Havener, fourth generation, and I love New Haven. And I think that if you love something, you should try to make it better or have it see its best self. And I think right now we have opportunity to really become a child-friendly city. And one of the ways to do that is to really provide this early care and education in an optimal way. And that relates to the ideal learning phrase. So ideal learning is really about finding a developmentally appropriate way to deliver early care and education to children, and then the families become part of that unit, obviously. So it's things like play-based work, relationship-based. It's looking at emotional intelligence. It's thinking about equity and the way that racial and ethnic barriers come up for young children. It's thinking from a strength-based perspective, assuming that the child and the family bring strengths to the table, and how do we enhance those strengths, and how do we counterbalance systemic issues such as racism and lack of access to care. It's also an inquiry-based approach, so thinking about learning as the child directing the learning and the teacher acting as a guide or a catalyst. And it's based on hundreds of years of research in terms of brain development. And so the programs that came together are Bank Street College of Education, Friends, which is the Quaker network throughout the country, Reggio Emilia, Tools of the Mind, Waldorf, and Montessori are really the impetus, and that was brought together by the Trust for Learning in 2015 to create this initiative and to think about how we can saturate a market and create a place-based pilot to really show what happens to a community when you create access to high quality for everyone, regardless of their race, their income, and where they live.
And I understand that this initiative has received about $1 million.
Yes.
And is it all privately funded to, you know, again, to launch these centers, as you mentioned?
Yes. Yeah, so we were fortunate enough to receive about $600,000 in in-kind and initial donations, which took us through 2015 to about 2 months ago and 3 months ago. And now we have been given a gift of $1 million. Unexpectedly, and just I think is a huge testament to New Haven in terms of people who really support this kind of work and see the importance of a systemic change in the way that we deliver early childhood education. It was given by a private foundation, Family Foundation, and we are, as always, exceptionally grateful for the belief in this work.
So when you there's a lot to tackle here,
yes.
But first, when we mentioned birth to five, this is an extension to birth to eight. So why that extension, another 3 years?
Well, early childhood education is really defined as birth to eight. So that was one of the reasons why we thought it was very important to include that in this initiative. A lot of initiatives that are happening around the country, and we studied about 37 other initiatives. To really take best practices that were happening out there, focus on either quality or either access, and they tend to be in the 0 to 5 range because there is no existing system there. And we know that in order for an initiative to be successful, we have to be in partnership with the New Haven Public School System. And we have found them to be good partners so far in terms of being at the table and thinking about this initiative and how do we create a pipeline. Mm-hmm. So if we have 14,000 children, almost 15, under the age of 8, 7,000 of those move into the public system. So we have to create a system that is in step and in link with where they're going to end up.
This is Where We Live. You're hearing Alex Schiavone, Executive Director of the Friends Center for Children and Interim Program Director of NH Child. This is an initiative we're learning about today here on the show. I'm curious of how you're working with the state of Connecticut. Again, in the past, we've heard about initiatives to connect more children to early education. I know there have been challenges with the Care for Kids reimbursements.
Yes.
So you have working families who need quality child care and they can't get it, and so that has a ripple effect in the family too. And so I'm just wondering, you know, how do you move forward, especially under a new administration?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we find is really important in NH Child is actually that we create a system and a pathway and a universe, so to speak, that actually can withstand leadership change, both on a local level. We're on our third superintendent in New Haven since we started this initiative, and we're on our second mayor. So we have to really create something that allows for that. The new opportunities that we see, and we've worked with every commissioner from Myra through Garth, up to Beth now, and so
Beth
Commissioner
Bai.
Yes. So we're very excited to have the opportunity, and I think what is becoming increasingly clear and is relevant to this, to our work, is that there is a renowned appreciation for the fact that we're in a crisis. And the crisis is that we do not have opportunities for children and for families to find care so they can work or to find care so that the children are stimulated in the way that they need to be in terms of brain development. We have found that the Office of Early Childhood has been especially supportive of these initiatives in terms of finding ways to close this gap. And their focus has really taken on an increasing focus of the 0 to 3 range, which we find is just a tremendous gap. If you think about in the state of Connecticut, there 4% of the need is being met. That's just such a tremendous opportunity to come in and really have huge impact. So some of the things that we're doing with Office of Early Childhood is thinking about different ways to fund the early care and education, because what's happening now is not working. As you reference Care for Kids, there's school readiness, there are New Haven daycare grant subsidies, but it's not enough and it's not working. So how do we shift it? I don't want us to be thinking about how to change what's existing, but how to create something new that works.
And we also know the achievement gap in this state is abysmal, and then it's and New Haven has a gap of 33%. So you mentioned we are at a crisis point to tackle some of these challenges. But part of your plan also is with your, you know, coalition with the partners is to, again, provide more slots, but to ensure that the education that the children are receiving is to a certain quality. And that also relates to licensing requirements for staff that are working in these daycare centers and programs. And how will you navigate that? Because that has also come up in the past. There have been some pushback, worry that some of the workers won't be able to have the resources to try to get that bachelor's degree. So I'm curious how you're thinking about that.
Yeah. I think there's so many important things to highlight there. One is that it is unrealistic for us as a state to expect a early child care worker to go and get a degree that costs more than their salary in 1 year, right? So one thing is we have to really take a hard look at how we fund early childhood, because we are dismissing the professionalism of the women. And I say women because it's 99% women. And a huge group of that, the women are minority women. So we're overburdened and under-resourced and getting paid sort of in this idea of women's work. So if we are going to expect a degree, we have to do a few things. One is we have to create pathways. So New Haven had no pathway, had no degree-granting system. So we, over the last, this has been happening for about 4 or 5 years, so the New Haven Early Childhood Council have created an MOU, an agreement between Gateway Community College and Southern, so that people can start at Gateway and move into Southern for their 4-year degree to meet the requirement for the state. Where the state comes in and where they do have funds is through their charts of course work, and they offer support for teachers who are getting their degree. The requirement, however, is that you are a head teacher to be able to access those funds. We would like to shift that and make it accessible to people as they move to the pipeline. Because if you only have head teachers who have access, you're not then creating the next person who's going to be moving into that. And when you have a stratified workforce where you have white teachers who tend to be in the head teacher position, you're not allowing for shifting or moving across hierarchically for a whole subset of people, of women.
So as we mentioned, this is a pilot starting in New Haven with the hopefully legs to expand and change how early education is perceived, the need for it throughout the state of Connecticut. We only have a couple of minutes left to Alex. So where do you go from here? What are your next steps?
I think that our plan is really to outline the 6 buckets of work. We have a strategic plan that takes us from point A to point Z for each of the areas that I mentioned before, with a budget, with a dollar amount included. We are in partnership and in relationship with other communities across the nation, actually.
So Boston, Tulsa.
Well, those are actually ones we looked at, but we're looking more in Colorado, New Jersey, places who are doing work. And so we believe that the work that we're doing here is not proprietary. It needs to be shared. It needs to be communicated. We have a universal problem across Connecticut and across the country in terms of how we manage and think about young children and what we need to do for them. And so we want to share the information that we have. We are creating a data dashboard to track our work, and we believe that is applicable to every municipality and every city or town in the state, as well as at the federal level. And we've been working with federal members of the existing
delegation.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Who have really been interested in the data dashboard as ways to track. So we're really excited about the implications primarily for New Haven and then externally.
Well, we look forward to checking in on this initiative as it continues to grow. But thank you so much, Alex Schiavone, Executive Director of the Friends Center for Children, Interim Program Director of this initiative in piloting in New Haven called NH Child. Alex, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Today's show produced by Lydia Brown. Our technical producer is Kion Wolf. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. As always, thanks for listening.